For me, I try to be emotionless when I buy and sell and just do it very strategically. But the same thing happens in any sales transaction. Many people are emotional about it. And understanding that, whether you're a buyer or a seller, is key for sure.
Plug into the minds of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Selling with Love podcast. I am so excited to have a legend in the field of investing that's going to be joining me today, Andy Turner. He is a paper asset expert, successful business owner, investor, and is a key person when it comes to teaching techniques on stock options, investing, and so much more. If you've ever heard of Rich Dad Poor Dad Kiyosaki's training, he has been the host of the Rich Dad YouTube channel with over 3.4 million subscribers. He's the founder of the Cashflow Academy, an online investing school with over 250,000 students from over 170 countries. He's also the author of 401k AOS. I'm going to have to understand that acronym a bit, so we'll unpack that. Released just over 10 years ago and has a foreword from Robert Kiyosaki. And what we're going to explore today is a little bit outside of our regular path, because I do want to talk investments, why it's important. How does that world work? What role does sales play there? And actually, personally, very curious to hear Andy's journey on how he was able to build such a reputation, brand, audience, and success for himself. Andy, welcome to the platform.
Oh, Jason, thanks for having me. I must say, I heard that 170 countries. Probably have like one student in five of those countries, but it has been a great ride. It has been a great ride, and I absolutely love sales. In fact, it's how I got started, so this will be a great conversation.
I do have a feeling that it plays a large part. You know, I've been interviewing so many people, and this is the thing I love the most doing, is realizing how much sales does play a part to a lot of people's success. So I can't wait to dig into this, but I'm going to go into a place where our audience has not heard much before. And the reason I'm going to go there is because I have this problem, and I have a feeling this is something you overcome with a lot of your students when it comes to investing, which is, in my case, I'm not American. I live in Southeast Asia. And when it comes to investing in stocks, it feels like there's so many roadblocks that are in the way for me getting started. And whether my roadblocks are more or less than someone else, I feel like that is the number one thing that prevents people from jumping into the stock market, is perhaps a perceived roadblocks or maybe real roadblocks. And I'd be curious to know, when someone is just like, yeah, I just don't invest because it seems like there's too many roadblocks to get started, how do you usually poke at them to, you know, disable that belief?
Well, in my home country, the United States, the predominant retirement system is called the 401k. In Canada, it's called an RRSP. In Asia, well, at least in Japan, they stole the name 401k. And in Australia, they call it a super. And all of those invest in equities, every single one of them. In fact, most places in the world, even if you're in Southeast Asia, they're taking your retirement funds and they're putting them into equities of some proportion. So what's interesting about that is people are already doing it. In fact, I would venture that there's probably not an asset class, if you lined up things like gold, crypto, real estate, business, and stocks, of all those asset classes, there's probably not one with greater participation already with less education than equities and stocks. So when people learn that and they think, well, gee whiz, you know, I'm already in it, maybe I should learn something about it, I think education is that barrier you talk about. It's because it's not taught in school. Generally, it's an education issue that people don't feel comfortable, rightly, in investing in things they don't understand. And it's simply awful if you don't understand it, but awfully simple when you do. And so that's one of the things we do, is we'll start people off with what we call a paper trade account. We'll give them some numbers and statistics to give them a little confidence, and we'll have them click that buy button for the first time and become a virtual stock owner. They realize, oh, I'm still here, and holy cow, this is not as bad as I thought it would. You know, owning companies like Coca-Cola and Tesla and Apple, it's an exciting thing to be an owner of those businesses, which is really what stock ownership is. So I'm certainly not afraid to be an owner of the Coca-Cola company. It's been around for over 100 years and survived several world wars. And so we help people over that fear. And it's not like riding a roller coaster. In fact, once they get on that train, they're like, this is a little bit smoother than I thought it was going to be. So that's a great question, though. And that's probably a long-winded answer to a short question. But I think the biggest barriers, people are often a little curious about or skeptical of things they don't understand. And once they understand them, that stuff goes away pretty quick.
Nice. Well, I think that's the exact answer I was listening to. And there's something I want to poke at, because you mentioned the emotions on the moment to buy. And this is something, even in the sales process, that I often forget when it comes to selling to a client, is the fact that there's such an important component in every transaction, which is the emotion. I mean, this is a lot of even what I talk about, and I forget it sometimes. The process, whether you're buying or you're selling, like this importance of emotions in the fact that an exchange is about to happen. How much do you pay attention to that when someone, say, is looking to buy your products, your service, or get to buy their first stock? Like, it's such a component that often isn't necessarily rational, but takes a big space and is so important.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they say that people, they often make a buying decision on emotion, then they justify it with logic, and that's no different in the stock market. What's fun about being a salesperson in the stock market, though, is something called liquidity. I love business. I love the negotiation of real estate. That's a high negotiation environment, which is very kind of a cousin of sales, I think, is negotiation. But if a person, you know, wants to get better at selling and they want to be able to sell something easy, you click the sell button and there's ready-made buyers you don't even have to talk to. And getting a sense of those emotions of greed or fear, they are overblown in the stock market. So for me, I try to be emotionless when I buy and sell and just do it very strategically. But the same thing happens in any sales transaction. Many people are emotional about it. And understanding that, whether you're a buyer or a seller, is key for sure.
Yeah. So something I don't usually go back to, but my initial business venture was actually real estate investment. I was actually a Canadian buying US real estate and had a lot of knowledge, I think, from your academy in the process as well. And so I just remember the first time buying the house, how much exhausted I was, like terrified, feeling stupid. And, you know, I just compared the experience of that first purchase and how much resistance there was to that versus after I did it like 20 times. And now it's like I signed some papers. I got myself some stuff out here in Bali and I'm just like, yeah, go through the motions. It's big numbers, but it makes sense. And again, you talked about how that education is key because it reduces that type of fear. Now, in your case, when you have that liquidity, you don't even need to purchase, like to talk to people. The system seems very, very mature. But there's still that first click to go over that it's almost like you need to do that first rep that's so uncomfortable. Do you recommend people to just do a small transaction really quickly just to get over that first transaction resistance?
I like where you're going with that, because generally, if you're going to make some money with real estate, it's going to be a larger transaction. You know, houses are larger investments compared to most that people make during their lifetime. But my first stock was a company, it's much more expensive now and it's gone public twice, but it was called the Panera Bread Company and it was around $16 a share. And so I bought 10 shares just to see if I could do it. And it was $160. So I knew that, you know, the worst thing that happened is if they went bankrupt, I'd lose $160. And that ability to learn with such low risk, the process is the same whether it's 10 shares or 10,000 shares. You click the button, put how many you want. So in addition to that education helping, the ability to scale down to fit what you can start with and your comfort level, you can learn with a paper trade account, risking no money, or if you want to put out a couple $100 to get your feet wet and see how it works, you can gain that confidence pretty quick.
You know, I think for me, just a direct action I'm going to take from this, because like I mentioned, my thing was in real estate. Stocks has always been a thing that I'm aware of, but I never took the effort to get into it. And I find I don't take care of anything until I'm invested into it. Like the same was with the crypto. Like I went to get a couple Bitcoins. So at least now I have some investment into paying attention to it. And I think I'll go talk to my fiance. And actually, she has stocks. I don't. And so I feel like we should get a joint little account and make sure we have at least some position so we can know that, being that this is one of the most, if not the most important investment vehicle that exists today, that's accessible to the majority of us, it's something that we should actually get started. And then once you're a little invested, then it's like, I'm invested to learn more because I'm already in it.
Yeah, I mean, and I have a really strange view from what most people think. You know, a lot of people want to talk about stocks or real estate or, you know, business or gold or crypto. I tend to talk about people because I remember I was on a panel once where you had a real estate guy and a stock guy. I was the stock guy. You know, they had a crypto guy and, you know, every tax lien guy, everybody. And they were trying to make us defend why our asset was the best thing. And I kind of turned the panel. I don't think they liked what I said. I said, you know, we're speaking as if our success was going to be a function of an asset instead of the function of personal development. And that's why I like what you do so much, because, you know, there's certain people that they're going to get the best return in their life by getting out of their shell and learning how to sell something. You know, one of the things I'm in the book business, right? I've written books, and I always tell people, if you want to make money, don't read a book. You'll learn so much more by the book you write. When you write a book, you learn more than anyone that'll ever read it. And I look at my mentor, Robert Kiyosaki. You know, he sold, you know, 40 million copies, literally 40 million copies plus of Rich Dad Poor Dad. He made more money with that book than anyone that read it. And so to be a producer in this world, right, to give to this world and to be a producer means, hey, sell what you have, whether it's your talent or your brain or your insight or your creativity, and learning how to offer value. Even in stocks, I do much more selling of options than I do buying, probably close to 50-1. I'll be an option seller because they decay like insurance does, and I can sell another and sell another and sell another and have this unending asset that I can sell and give true value to people. And so I was excited to get together because you get me going on sales. You know, this will be a lot longer than a half-hour podcast, because for some people, whether you want to be an entrepreneur or you want to be a real estate investor, a stock investor, you're going to make your money by either clicking the sell button or signing a contract that sells something or giving someone a receipt where you sold something. Selling means money's coming towards you. That's a huge thing. Even if I buy real estate, I'm going to sell space to a renter. So if you want to have a wealth plan that gets you from zero to wherever you want to be quickly, learn how to sell, whether it's by clicking a mouse without the gift of gab or negotiation with the gift of gab. The ability to be proud, to give value. And, you know, the name of your podcast, you know, Selling with Love. People think that sales has to be one-upsmanship or some type of intellectual prowess. If that was the case, I'd have no students because I'm of average intelligence, maybe a hair below if you listen to me long enough. But sales is just service. It's just saying, look, I have some value, and I'm going to help you get this value. You know, value is what you receive. Money's just what you get rid of, but value is what you get to take home the rest of your life. And I'm very, very proud of the value I can give to you. You know, there can be win-loses. You know, people can take advantage, but my goodness, there's nothing wrong with a transaction that blesses someone's life where it's like my sons. I go, if your little glass of lemonade is worth more than that 50 cents. There's an inequality there, not an equality, it's an inequality. You're giving more than you're taking or they won't trade the money. So sales is really, if you love it, if it's with love, you'll be giving someone more than what you're taking. And that's true with an iPad, right? I mean, I'll give Steve Jobs that money all day long because it's worth more than $300 or whatever they cost, right? They're worth more than that. So for people to be afraid of that, no, be proud of that, right? So don't get me going on sales.
Brother, this is the thesis. Like, I feel like we're cut from the same cloth because this is exactly what I'm trying to distill in people's mind. I'm so happy that, you know, this has been my blessing from being in a position of interviewing amazing people like you, is that when people have that stereotype of sales being evil or bad or manipulative,
combative, right? Adversary. It's not like that.
I bring these successful people that have been doing amazing stuff. And when I realize that great sales happen from the energy you just spoke about, is such a reminder that there's a lot of crap out there that we shouldn't pay attention to. There's a lot of bad sales experiences that we've taken very personally, and it is very personal, but that cloud the view of how the majority of sales happen, which are partnerships, great exchanges, successful. I mean, the entire world was built on the fact that sales have been happening around that energy, which is offering more than what you ask in return. And now we have abundance in the world. Like, that's the byproduct of continuously great sales going on, which makes me want to go into your history, because most people don't have that sales mindset. And it sounds like you got a leg up from having that sales mindset. Where did that come from for you?
I think I might be the luckiest person in the world. I mean, I'm not a complete idiot. My wife might disagree. You know, I don't have the fastest processor going up here, and the RAM is very limited. My kids will tell you. But I was very, very lucky. You know, I'm a big guy. I'm about 6'8". I was the worst basketball player in the history of my school, but I was able to foul, so they gave me a little money to go to school. And I wound up at a school called the University of Utah, and they're a nice basketball school. And my coach was a Hall of Fame coach, great coach, Rick Majerus. And I learned more there about teamwork and competitiveness. But in the classroom side, I never found my way. We had accounting and then biology and then communications and all the way down to zoology, A to Z. I found nothing that filled me with life and spirit and information. Absolutely nothing like set me off. So I was pretty good with people. I was brought up by my parents with this. I was always worried about going to hell, very religious family. So, you know, you would never tell a lie because you were scared of going to hell. And between just being genuine and having the gift of gab, I wound up in sales when basketball was over. And I would sell everything under the sun. I absolutely loved it. I loved the feeling of getting a deal done. I love the feeling of a win-win. I love the thank you note that I would send out to someone who bought. I love the thank you note back from someone that bought, right? I loved that. And so I sold everything under the sun, man. I mean, it's everything under the sun.
Give me one of your initial product sales, because those are always fun.
Oh, I've done everything. I remember one time I was in a parking lot and some guy approached me because I was talking to someone. He says, man, you look like you're pretty bold just talking to whoever. I says, I don't care. And he said, hey, I sell water softeners door to door. And I said, I'll give it a shot. So I went out and I says, let me try it a couple of days. I've done everything. I mean, you know, phone stuff and everything else. And I loved every minute of it. Well, as I became more custom and got better at it, I started doing things like trade shows and, you know, big stuff. And people started asking me to give speeches, which was really an honor. To get paid for giving speeches was like insane. And I remember in the 90s, you know, when the internet, everyone jokes about Vice President Al Gore when he said that he invented the internet, you know, right about the time he claimed to invent it, which he didn't. Online software for people to trade by themselves online, so many people were being cut out of things. You know, real estate agents were being replaced by booking online, and calling up your broker just doesn't happen anymore. You do it online. And so there was a company that approached me that had a nice software for trading, and they had support and education that went with it. Say, Andy, you're a pretty good salesman. Why don't you come work for us and sell our investing software? I says, I don't know anything about investing. But they go, yeah, but you can sell. I says, all right. As I started using this stuff and learning about its features and benefits, I was amazed. Like, this is really cool stuff. And right around the same time, the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad came into my life. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to sell this to people, I should really learn how to use it better. And after tons of mistakes and lots of money lost and headaches and experience and a school of hard knocks where the school colors were black and blue and the tuition was significant in mistakes, I was fortunate to start my own company and start selling my own education and start doing this the way I felt it should be done the best. And, you know, you don't grow as we've been fortunate to grow without the honest conversation with people about how your things can help them in a very real way. And I think the number, you know, you lift off some nice numbers, Jason, that were nice of you to say about how we've grown the number of investors. The one I'm most proud of was last year's 93% of our students stay and are satisfied. And the 7% aren't angry. It just wasn't a fit for them. That's why I say, you know, is stocks the most important asset class? I don't know. You know, some people, real estate is their thing. You know, for 93% of the people that come, they like what we do. And others say, I think I'd rather go out and start a business and sell something and hustle, which, go for it. You know, I applaud that. I like doing them all, every asset class. Making money it's a thrill and it's a blessing and it's an honor. So that's a long-winded way of, it was actually a sales path that introduced me into the idea of investing, and that's what I do today. I have a sales career to thank for turning me into a student of investing.
Lovely. Now I definitely see why coming on a Selling with Love podcast was definitely like a hell yeah.
Yeah, I was like, absolutely. Well, and I've never been asked to be on a podcast like this. Most people want to talk about stocks, but the personal development of learning how to sell and make you a better person.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost like because sales gets such a bad rap, I feel like a lot of people sneak the education you need to be better at sales, but using different terms. They'll be like, everyone just dodges around the word. And it's so funny. I was at a good friend's wedding yesterday. Some of their sales teams were there, but they called themselves something completely different. They'll call themselves like igniters. And it's like, we're almost afraid of the word sales. And
oh my gosh.
I think I'm swimming against the current, because to me, it's like, I'm trying to make sales cool again. Like, I want people to just be like, just claim you're a salesperson and be okay with that. But with the market and responding to them as well, which I definitely do appreciate, is how much stigma does revolve around sales. And I'd be curious to know what you've witnessed around that stigma that you mostly encounter. And given your track record and the way that you've used sales.
Oh, it's such a blessing. I remember it was either Zig Ziglar, it might have been Brian Tracy, any of these sales guys, that I've hung out with and were mentors early. But one of them invoked the Pareto principle, that 80-20 rule. And it's so awesome because, if you want a career in sales or be an entrepreneur and sell your stuff, if you can get in that 20%, you're home free, and it's not hard to do. There's so many bad salespeople out there, and people who really have a deceptive, they think they're outsmarting you or tricking you or whatever, and they walk away from a sale thinking, boy, I really closed that guy. Those guys don't last long, and it's such an opportunity because there's so many guys like that, that the fact there is this stigma and the fact that there are so many people who are so bad at it because they think about it in terms of win-lose, it's actually, I think, easier now than ever before to set yourself apart. I actually think it's an opportunity. One of the things I just love is compliance. In the securities industry, there's a lot of standards for compliance and, people in their earnings claims, and they claim, to get something for nothing. It's like they promised the Garden of Eden. It's not realistic. All good, no bad, all enjoyment, no work, all reward, no risk. There's so many guys that are not skilled in that craft that there's a couple ways you can sell. You can sell by making promises, and that's low skill, low hanging fruit. Oh, if you buy my thing, all these great things are going to happen to you. And look at all these features and benefits. But if you can actually make promises and keep them, the result of that is trust that's genuine and true. And I think one of the things we've done a really good job of at my company, if you want to know how to sell better, just have great stuff to sell, keep your promises, and the result of a kept promise is trust. And then people will just come back. Most great brands, they have great branding and marketing. I mean, Coke sales, I own a lot of shares of Coca-Cola, and it's been on a tear lately. You don't need to sell that hard because people trust it. They know what they're getting. They know what those products are, and all you're doing is simply helping people get that they want. Sales is service. It was Zig Ziglar who said, you'll get anything you want in life in the effort to help other people get what they want. And so when you take a standpoint of service and selfishness, there's nothing to be afraid of at that point, because who's afraid of helping people get what they want? And the fact that you're going to be compensated for that a little bit, for giving a lot, that's something you can be very proud of and never apologize for. So sales is really about serving other people. And I'm grateful. I remember, I'm too long-winded.
No, this is what I want. So keep going, Andy.
I'm usually the host of my podcast, so I ask questions and never get to talk. So now I'm a guest. Wah, 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 wah.
Take it. You got the mic. It's like, this is your chance.
Got the conch shell. Can't shut me up. But it is something I'm passionate about, right? But I remember when I was first married, I was fortunate. We probably had a year or two that we really struggled. And after that, once I kind of started selling well, we have never wanted in our marriage and our family. but we did want it to be more frugal. So we're going to go buy this car. My wife's, we're going to buy a car. I'm like, I'm just going to get a cheap little minivan or something, just John Stockton-like. You know, he had millions of dollars as a basketball player, but he drove a minivan, and the sales guy knew I had the money for a nice-sized SUV. And so I'm being all frugal, and I'm looking at these stupid minivans, 1,000 years ago. I can't believe that's so not my personality, but I was trying to be frugal. And the guy said, if someone T-bones your wife or hits your wife, what do you want her driving? That was great salesmanship, not because it got me to upgrade, but as I thought about it, he was really telling the truth. He was genuine with it. And man, I bought that SUV like that fast, and it was really interesting because I was grateful for that perspective. And he did me a favor and I thanked him for it. I'm like, that was a great upsell. Because it was genuine, it was real, and I could afford it. There's no reason not to, go with something deluxe there. And wife was happier that she didn't have to go to the store in the minivan. So
there's the real buying power right there.
There's so many times where if what you're selling is life-changing, I'm so proud of what I sell, Cashflow Academy. I wish people could just feel the confidence in it for themselves in what they're selling, whatever it might be. If you're hesitant, if you're a salesman out there selling whatever, and you're hesitant, really review what you're offering and if you're proud of it. Because, at the Cashflow Academy, I mentioned I own Coca-Cola and I own shares of Apple and I own shares of, dozens and dozens of all kinds of companies I've owned. And I own real estate. Via that, I sell a lot of stuff. I sell a lot of soft drinks. I sell a lot of food. ExxonMobil, I sell energy, housing. I sell housing. All kinds of things I'm constantly selling, and money comes to me because of that. But at the Cashflow Academy, without getting too emotional about it, we don't sell soft drinks or oil. We sell a change in people's lives. We sell personal development of a human soul. And I've traveled, extensively. I haven't been to all 172 countries, but I've been to a lot of them, I'll tell you that. There's beautiful mountains and, beautiful oceans and beautiful beaches and beautiful cities, but there is nothing more beautiful than the transformation of a human soul to achieve their potential and live in prosperity. When their financial well-being is truly elevated, and to be a part of a mission like that, what could you sell that is more valuable for the money than personal development, a change in a human being? And the transformation is simple. They couldn't do it before. They can do it now. I'll never apologize for selling those types of things. Never apologize, because the value is so much bigger than the price. And you know how you make it up? My kids ask me this. Dad, if we give a lemonade that's worth more than 50 cents, how are you ever going to get ahead? If we give more than you receive, how do you get ahead? I said, simple. Make it up in volume, boys. Do a lot of it. And you'll be just fine. Those numbers work out. So anyway, that's my little stump speech or on the bully pulpit or whatever you want to call it for sales.
Here's where I'm going to take you, Andy, because you're already touching on so many points that I think are important for people to realize. And the biggest thing, if you're tuning into this and you're hearing Andy, that level of confidence, conviction when it comes to selling their own product, like that's what I talk about. When I say selling with love is having that conviction that you have when you speak about what you sell, that you become relentless in a very loving way. This is not manipulation. This is actually transcribing. Like you're speaking a language that's necessary for people to understand the value you want to give to them. Now, there's one sale I want to kind of dissect from what you're saying, because sometimes there's something that can poke at that, which is the first sale is the sale to yourself, right? Like if you haven't sold yourself on the fact that selling this to this person is the most important decision they can make, then you're going to have that hesitancy that you spoke about. And if then somebody's been on social media long enough and has decided to go down the comments route, you'll get like 1,000 people you'll do great things to. You'll get two of them that are very, very loud that will say, this is bullshit. This is terrible. You're an awful human. And like the more you put yourself out there, it's statistics. Now that you're in front of 1,000, 10,000, you're going to get one or two people that are loud talking negatively. And that could affect confidence. It could instill self-doubt. So I feel like a big part of that mindset around selling yourself is so important. And I'd love to hear about your experience about what habits we've already talked, have a great product for sure. What are other things you think about to ensure that you continuously have that giving mindset when you're selling?
Well, let's talk about the chirpers in the comments like you talked about. There's always chirpers. I don't get in the pew like I should. My parents put me in the pew so many times as a kid. I hope I've done my due there. But there's a wonderful story in the New Testament about this, and it's called the parable of the sower. And it says a sower went out to sow the seeds, and he's sowing the seeds. He's throwing them out there. And every seed was good. Every single seed. I crack open an apple, that seed's good. I mean, there's very few mutations to where it wouldn't grow. Most of the time, it's the ground. And when the sower sowed these seeds, some of it landed on stony ground. The birds ate it because the ground was too hard. Some was in shallow ground where it couldn't get root, and the sun withered it because it had a root system. Others were choked out by weeds. It was weedy ground. And when you have a book like Think and Grow Rich, and you go to Think and Grow Rich on Amazon, you look at the reviews, it's going to have 4.5 stars, not 5. Now, if I look at the people who don't like Think and Grow Rich, that really doesn't tell me much about the book, but it tells me about the ground. It tells me about the ground they were in. So when I see a person's review, I often realize it's negative. If everyone else is positive, like 90% are positive, and I see one or two reviews that are negative, I'm certainly going to listen to those reviews for feedback, but I'm also going to realize, is this really about the seed that I offered or about the ground that it landed upon? And you'll find there are people in this world that are so wired in such a way that if it isn't something for nothing, if it isn't everything for free in their life, if it isn't, there's a something for nothing wiring to some people. They want to live in the Garden of Eden. They want a fantasy land. And so the way I deal with those comments is I ask myself, what ground did my seed hit? Because it seems like this seed is growing pretty darn well about 93% of the time out of here. Maybe it's just the ground that some people are. You get a bad review on a book called Think and Grow Rich. Maybe it's that person really didn't give the book the proper attitude possibly, right? So that's kind of how I deal with that stuff is I'm a sower of seeds as a salesman. I've got great seeds. And I'm going to sow them and spread them around. And if it falls on ground, then what it is, it's my job. You know, like Robert Cialdini was on my podcast, who wrote Persuasion. And I mean, he's master. And he and I talked about this, that cultivation is really important. That if I see someone that doesn't take the seed I offered, I blame myself a little bit. And I say, you know, could I have done better to cultivate that person and help that ground open and change their wiring from negative to positive and turn their attitude from selfish to unselfish? Could I do some things to inspire, not just sell? Those are the ways I approach some of that stuff.
You know, using this analogy, it makes me feel like sales is about, you know, planting the seeds, hoping that they grow. Marketing is about putting out fertilizer to as much as you can so that there's even more possibility for that ground to be fertile. Do you find yourself having some sort of balance around how much you want to, say, fertilize the existing soil versus, you know, if it is soil that's not super fertile, to try to break that down into better soil? Like, do you spend more time on the existing positive audience? And that kind of talks about target market versus trying to open the bridge for the people that are on the fringes and they're a little more difficult to work with, but you also kind of really want to help them because you know they need it.
I'm probably not a good person to listen to with people on the fringe because I'll give people about that much of my time. And if I start that first little cultivation, I feel like it's concrete. I'm wasting my time and I'm damaging my tools and there's other better ground to till. So I don't waste my time. Sales is about what we call positioning. And there's this thing called posture. And so let's say that you had a life preserver and someone was drowning. You have a position to help them and they're in a position to be helped. And I always want to be Superman. I always want to be the person that's helping. I never want to be the person that's begging. So if someone dangles their cash in front of me, that's the wrong way. I need to be dangling my solutions in front of them. So I don't spend much time with people on the fringe. Now, if I love the person, I'll cultivate. And this is an interesting thing. It's kind of a secret society, but I've been known to give to select groups once a year. Is I'll come in, I'll do a seminar on sales. I'll do a 2-day, and I'll do this, and people come in. It's kind of my secret little human trick or whatever. And I'll share with them how I built my company and what's been beneficial. And I remember I was talking about preparing people, this thing called persuasion or framing, where you bring someone in a context. So I'll give you an example of what framing would be, is putting someone in a context where they'd be more accepting of a message. Is I had a friend of mine, and his son was 16 and started driving, had a girlfriend. They're out driving late at night. One day he comes home from school. This is such a great story that my friend told me. The kid comes in. He says, "Hey, Mom, I don't know how to tell you this, so I'm just going to tell you. Julie's pregnant. She's expecting, and I'm the father." And there was a long, silent pause. And then he said, "Mom, actually, no, but I did get a speeding ticket today." Now, that's called framing, to where if he would have come out and said, "Mom, I got a speeding ticket," it would have been bad news. But he created a psychological frame. He tilled that ground and fertilized it to where that seed would be accepted with glee. And they rejoiced over the speeding ticket. So I'm teaching this. And some guy in the workshop says, "Do you use this stuff on your wife?" And immediately I knew what the condition of his marriage was. And I said, "I think you need to understand something. My wife and kids, I sell them all the time, all the time. And my wife will, she kind of knows my little strategies. Sales has strategies. It's okay to use them if you have a good heart." And I said, "You know, my wife, as soon as I'll start going into a spiel," she says yes immediately. Not because of the spiel, but because she knows that as soon as I go into that, I'm trying to serve her in some way, and she knows it. You know, why would I want to convince my wife to do something that I wanted that she didn't? That would not be selling with love. So while I don't spend a lot of time with people on the fringes, if it's someone close to me and I think they would really benefit from a change in mindset, if my son is going to go shoot a foul shot and the other team ices him and he comes in the huddle, oh, I'll use every type of sales strategy I know to build his confidence to hit that foul shot. When it comes down to selling with love, maybe I'll share this little story. I asked my group, I said, "What's Superman's greatest superpower?" And they said, you know, X-ray vision or faster locomotive or flying or whatever. I go, "Superman's greatest superpower is his heart. Because if he didn't have a good heart, he'd be a supervillain, not a superhero." And that's what selling with love is it's Superman's heart that is his great, I got a little goosebump on that. It's Superman's heart that allows him to sell with love and do things with love. Otherwise, he'd be a super villain. Well, the same might be true if a guy has the gift of gab and the guy understands NLP and, you know, all the psychological manipulations that some people get into. Doesn't really matter. If the heart's not there, they're not selling with love and service. So the heart is the big one.
Andy, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. There's a part of me that's laughing because you're saying, "Oh, I'm going on these long wind," but you're like stringing together the message that I've been trying to distill to my audience in such a beautiful way that it's been an honor to be here, to listen, to hear of your success and how you've been applying the principles that we keep talking about here on the show. It's funny because my last question I usually ask guests is, "How would this selling with love mean to you?" And you've already answered that question.
I've got enough. Yeah, enough Andy for sure.
It's so wonderful to hear. It's refreshing to hear. And it's something that I'm hoping for anybody who's just tuned in and perhaps you've just discovered Andy Tanner here. I want to put some links in the show notes for you to go and listen to the YouTube. Go to cashflowacademy.com. You'll be able to see so much more if you're interested in investing, if you're interested in just seeing how he's set up his business, which has these loving ways of exchanging value and selling powerfully, that you'll be able to look at, get involved with. Would you say those are the best places that you would recommend people to get started with you, Andy?
If people would like me to sell something to them, I can give them a present.
All right, well, here's this. I usually don't let my guests pitch, but because you've done such an amazing job, I would love to witness an offer from you, no, Andy, so please.
It's pretty simple. You were kind enough to mention our website, thecashflowacademy.com, you know, T-H-E, cashflowacademy.com. They have these little forward slashes you can put at the end. And if you put in SWL after that forward slash, we have some special stuff for the listeners of Selling with Love. So if you go cashflowacademy.com/SWL, my team has put together some goodies, and yeah, I'll probably sell you something if you go there. But the thing I can promise is you'll get some great stuff for free first, and we'll build some trust and see if it's right for you. Because if you're nervous about selling, the one thing I can guarantee is you can pick up a mouse, click, and sell something every time in the stock market. So if you've never said, I can't sell anything, I can help you sell stuff. And it's pretty liquid. So just an honor, Jason, to be with, you know, a kindred spirit and someone who has an understanding of that beautiful exchange that can be between products, services, and people. So thank you. Thank you for letting me be long-winded and talk.
We had a good time. Andy, it's been an absolute pleasure. Once again, for everybody, that link that was just mentioned here, which is thecashflowacademy.com/SWL, we'll put a link of that into the show notes, so you'll be able to grab that as well if you prefer to click on your first click there. But honestly, I love that most of the things that happen in life that you need to learn, you need to discover, has that gap in education, especially if there's that resistance with sales. You know, I've noticed in your story, a lot of reps were put in different types of sales, whether that was on the phone, on the click, or in person. And if you're just trying to get started with sales, you know, I do like the fact that your first sales might just be at the click of a button. And we can start warming up that muscle to do more and more sales and have success follow as well. Andy, absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Jason. Have a good day.
I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.